So the major factor driving climate change, we're told, is carbon buildup in the atmosphere. Any one of a number of experts say we could live well at 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. We're already running over 400 consistently. Well, trees can help, right? Trees take up carbon and sequester it. But if the trees are hurting, they can't help much. That's a rough view of a new piece of scientific research. It is an article called Observed Forest Sensitivity to Climate Implies Large Changes in 21st Century North American Forest Growth. It's in the journal Ecology Letters, publication date July 19th. The principal author is Noah Charney, who's a postdoctoral research associate at the University of Arizona and our guest in the exchange. Dr. Charney, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's a very big study. What did you look at?
Well, we looked at a whole bunch of tree ring records from the 1900 to 1950, compiled a bunch of records of how trees grow under different climates, and used those to project in the future how trees are going to grow across the whole continent based on the IPCC projections of future climate.
Wow, 2 million tree ring records. How'd you lay hands on all of those?
Well, so the 2 million number refers to the actual each year's growth in each core. So each core might have 50 years in it in a single set of tree rings.
And it was with the trees all over the continent?
Yeah, so there's almost 1,500 sites across the continent. And, you know, I didn't look at those individually myself, of course. These are compiled in a database that's available online that we sort of poured through and used that data that's available from a bunch of other researchers who had collected them in the past.
So, Noah, how would you characterize the major finding of this this study?
Well, the major finding is, you know, massive changes, right? So what we see is, in the center of the continent, we're going to see a lot of decrease in growth, and on average, we are looking at most of the trees across the continent are going to be slowing down in growth. But we are seeing in some areas along the coast some increase in growth. This is, again, I should just say that this is a reasonable guess as to the future. We don't really know what's going to happen, but this is based on a model that seems reasonable. And in that model, places like the Pacific Northwest, we do see some increases in growth.
So were there some assumptions among other scientists? I mean, you do mention other work in this publication, but was there an assumption that got some traction out there that if we just had more trees, we could potentially sequester more carbon and that would improve climate change conditions?
Yes. Well, there was a couple hypotheses. There was like the boreal greening hypothesis, which was that, you know, in these cold northern forests, if we add a little heat, the growing season gets longer and then the trees can grow faster and maybe they'll suck up extra carbon and save us from climate change. The problem is that in our models, when we run it, a little extra heat helps the trees up there grow a little faster, but we end up adding more heat than is helpful, and it becomes a detriment, essentially. So there's more heat than there is extra water, and they enter sort of a more drought-like condition. And so the trees, on average, tend to slow down in those northern areas in what we're seeing.
So in a sense, this at least sounds to my ears like a bit like a State of the Trees report. So, I mean, what are we finding out then, given what you're finding from all these growth rings from all these trees about the general condition of trees across the continent?
Well, I mean, we don't necessarily say anything about the condition they're in right now, but we suggest that in the future, on average, the trees are going to be growing more slowly. And, you know, the previous guests on the show were talking about extreme events like fires and insects and stuff, and we're talking about average growth rates, which is important for sucking up carbon, but is also important because if trees are sort of in a sustained slow growth period, they're essentially in a resource-limited mode, and they start to lose resilience, so they'll be more likely to fall prey to insects or fires or things like that. So it makes them less resilient if a big event comes along. And so it's sort of bad news from a couple of different directions.
All right, now let's get into the technical terms here, because what you're talking about appears to be one of the key terms, which is a WUE. I don't know if you call it a WUE, but what is that?
So that's water use efficiency. It's a little trick here. So there's this other piece of the puzzle, right? We're looking at changes in temperature and precipitation. But the other thing is there's also just more carbon floating around in the air. And as you know, when trees photosynthesize, they need carbon. They breathe in carbon just like we breathe in oxygen. And so you might think that extra CO2 floating around in the air might make the trees grow faster. This is called carbon fertilization. So it's difficult to model that exactly, but what we did instead was we tied carbon fertilization to this idea of water use efficiency, because when the leaves open their pores to suck in carbon, they're also losing water. And so carbon uptake is linked to water loss, and that's the water use efficiency thing. So in our model, we actually simulate extra carbon by just adding more rain, because extra water is the same as extra carbon in the way plants grow, and or it can be modeled that way anyway.
Haven't talked yet about what kinds of trees we're talking about. Is this a broad range of hard and softwood trees?
Yeah, so we looked at a pretty good range. I mean, it tended to be more conifers just because that's what was in the tree ring records. But we looked at a whole bunch of different genera from across the continent, whatever occurred in the plots where people happened to be coring these trees.
Noah Charney is a postdoctoral research associate at the University of Arizona and the chief author of a report indicating that perhaps trees are not going to help as much with climate change as we might have thought because they are stressed by climate change. You can join us on The Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. John and Vanita got on during the previous discussion and stayed, so I assume he wants to talk right here. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, great show again. And I'm back again with my my thing about old growth, the term old growth. Oh, and I'm speaking of our big fir force here, by the way.
Okay.
Topic's broader. But the term old growth and I grew up with was virgin forest. So you can differentiate. One has been there ever since, because many of these trees are many hundreds of years old. And there you can draw a line if you want, which I do. I don't want them cutting any more of them down. They've already got 85-90% of it. They've turned us into a pretty big tree farm here, and it changes the ecosystem, the mycelium, everything, and it changes when they clear cut, and then they grow their cornrow crops. And then on top of that, some of the management has been so horrible. We've got what another term, woodsy term, is dog hair, thick, dense stuff that they didn't thin when they should have. And it's just a bomb. I used to be a welfare fighter, and I look at this and I think, no, they need to take care of what we got and leave our kids something huge and original.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate that. Any thoughts you want to add back to that, Noah?
Well, yeah, and I think, I mean, I certainly love old growth forests too, and I think, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, if we're thinking about, you know, the results of our study from a global perspective, these areas where we actually think there might be faster growth in the future might be the areas where you have the greatest responsibility to the global community to keep your trees there, because they're going to be the most efficient at sucking up carbon. Whereas in other places where there's going to be trees that are slowing down, they aren't going to be as good carbon uptake machines. And so there is an argument that maybe those areas we really should be keeping those trees, especially the big trees, because recent research has shown that bigger trees are more efficient at uptaking carbon as well.
All right, that was a question I was leading to, was what kind of resilience you notice as trees age and if there are some sweet spots for certain species.
You know, I can't get into the specifics on that. I think in general, yeah, there is more resilience in older trees, and certainly probably there's a point at which they're too old for that kind of resilience, perhaps, but maybe not. So, I probably shouldn't go too much further into that. That's not my specialty.
Fair enough. You mentioned a whole bunch of different tree genera. I wonder if there's any particular genus or species that appear to be taking in a special beating from climate change based on what you found.
Well, you know, again, we actually pooled all species and treated all trees as sort of the same, and that's because things like Doug fir, in some parts of the country, they have a certain response to climate and are going to be affected in a certain way, and in other parts of the country, that same species is going to respond differently because trees respond based on sort of the local environment in which they live, and, you know, it's just like if you're on the north side of the mountain versus the south side of the mountain, you're going to want different things in terms of more sun or moisture.
So is this ultimately as simple as saying the trees can't capture carbon as well because they're fighting for their own lives?
Yeah, I guess you could think about it that way. Although, I mean, the capturing carbon just means, you know, that's what trees do when they grow. That's growth. That's just they're putting carbon into wood. Mm-hmm. And so fighting for their lives, meaning they're slowing down, they're sucking up less carbon.
You do mention a feedback loop in the research. What is that about?
Well, so one of these feedback loops would be if global warming causes trees to grow more slowly, that means there's going to be more carbon left in the air to cause more global warming, which would cause trees to grow even more slowly. if that makes sense.
So do the effects get more pronounced over time then?
Yeah, so it is essentially like instead of putting the brakes on, we're kind of pushing down on the accelerator the more we go forward.
All right, we have another call on the line. Here's John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Noah Charney.
Hi. This is a question I always have. My lifespan is only 60 years, which makes me kind of an old-growth person.
Right.
Like, when I was a kid, it would be really unusual to come upon a forest fire, a place that had burned when we were hiking or even driving. And now, I just came back from California, there's fires all over the place. Is this an unusual period, either caused by people or historically, or was it unusual in my youth that there were so few forest fires? I'm just trying to get a handle on what percentage of the forests had burned over history, and is this an unusual time?
Huh, a really interesting question. I'm not sure Noah's equipped to answer that. Was that within the scope of what you've studied here?
Yeah, not exactly. I mean, I think every time is probably an unusual time. So I don't know. I can't specifically comment. I do know that, you know, we're predicting there to be more fires, and there have been some increases in fires, and certainly management and climate change are sort of intertwined with that. So, yeah.
Give us a sketch, Noah, if you would, of the other people who are involved with this, because it looked like there were about half a dozen other authors on the report.
Yeah, so most of us sort of had some link to the University of Arizona, and there were folks at the tree ring lab there that's all they do is study tree rings, and they had access to the rings and tools to analyze them. And then we had some experts on things like water use efficiency that were over in Europe. I'm trying to remember which countries we had. We had a few different countries and people were moving all around. But most of us had some tie to the University of Arizona, either in the past or currently.
Talk about the peer review process. I mean, when you put an article like this in, I mean, by the time it gets published, have a number of scientists had a chance to fire some bullets at the work?
Sure, and in fact, we've had this rejected by two journals first, the Science and Nature, so like, we've had a lot of peer review, a lot of people looking carefully at it, and we've made a lot of changes since then. You know, I'm probably the first one to fire bullets at this because I can see all the flaws, and I see that it's just an approximation, it's a simulation, it's something that's reasonable. And the main concern that most folks have is essentially, well, we don't really know. And that's the sort of the crux of the reviewer's main concerns with this kind of manuscript is, you know, the future is so different from things we might have seen in the past that how are we going to really say with confidence how trees will behave when the climates of the future, there's no analog in the past. And that's really the main sort of problem with doing this kind of study.
How much, if at all, did the hypothesis you began with evolve based on the things that you were finding as you went along?
Well, I actually didn't start out with a clear hypothesis, in part because this isn't the realm of where a lot of my background is. I didn't actually do a lot of forestry before this. So I just kind of wanted to know what's going to happen. And I was sort of surprised, I think, at the scale and the magnitude of change that we're going to see in terms of the, you know, we're seeing up to 75% slower growth projected for a lot of the country, which seems just like a really big number.
75% slower growth?
Yeah.
So what do forest managers, what do people who got the trees, you know, their cedars are looking a little yellow these days. What do they do with the information?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, like I suggested, you might take away different things depending on if you're in an area where we expect there to be faster growth. You might, you know, covet your trees a little more, or if there are places where there's slower growth, you might be more concerned about your future. I haven't quite come up with exactly what everyone should do other than look at the map and think about their backyard and think about how important it is for us to come together and sort of clamp down on greenhouse gas emissions.
The report is available online. The publication is called Ecology Letters. It's the July 19th issue, and the title of the work is Observed Forest Sensitivity to Climate Implies Large Changes in 21st Century North American Forest Growth. Noah Charney is a postdoctoral research associate at the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Arizona, and he is the chief author. Noah, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
All right, take care.